So, Brett Kelly, let me get this straight. You are a man who started a small publishing startup, which then led to being picked up and hired by the large software startup that you were writing about in the first place. Is that about right?
Mostly, yeah.
Okay, we're going to get into all the details about that, but you can correct me later on.
All right.
And I want to know, why you did what you did, how you did what you did. I'm going to ask you specific questions about that, but let's begin at the beginning. What is your background and what were you doing before you wrote this book called Evernote Essentials?
I was working at a advertising creative agency doing web programming. I've been programming professionally for 8 or 9 years at that point. And yeah, that's basically it, building websites and other computery stuff.
So you had a bit of a handle on this stuff. You knew the web, your way around the web, and you were building websites. And when did you stumble across Evernote, which people will shortly find out is what your ebook is about? But when did you stumble across Evernote? And tell us what Evernote is, first of all, and why you fell for it.
So Evernote is a piece of productivity software. It's a software and a web service. So you can put just about any kind of data in it, like text, audio, PDFs, images, all sorts of stuff. And it gets synchronized up to web servers and then back down to your Mac, your PC, your Android phone, your iPad, your iPhone, et cetera, all your stuff. So you basically have this big unlimited library of stuff that you can carry with you and have all wherever you are. It's really amazing, actually. And the way I got wind of it initially was a buddy of mine back in, I want to say April 2008. I might have the month wrong, but they had just launched a private beta of their new revised desktop applications. And a friend of mine, because we were both sort of productivity nerds at the time, he said, "Hey, you want to check out this Evernote thing? It looks pretty cool." So he just sent me, he had a couple of invites to the service, so I went and checked it out. And I fired it up and I read through like what it did and what it was about, and I went, "Holy crap, like I can drop like my work notes into this application, and then when I go home and fire up my Mac, they're going to be there. And like I can edit them and put them," and then the iPhone version came out, and like I was just, "Holy crap, this thing is amazing." So I
Yeah,
basically
and
just
this is, it's pretty amazing now, but back then it was fairly revolutionary. The idea of syncing all these things, dumping, I mean, you could, correct me if I'm wrong, but you could dump everything into this one place. What's the line I've heard? Your brain online,
your external
unofficial,
brain.
your external brain. Okay. So I don't know if that's an unofficial description or tagline for Evernote, but yeah, back then this was revolutionary.
Yeah, definitely. And I think this is back in the era when I'm not sure if Dropbox was out yet, but those were sort of the idea of the, because MobileMe, and not to get too technical, but like a lot of people had tried doing like syncy stuff before, and most of it was just abysmally bad. Never
Yeah,
really worked
right.
right. And when Evernote started, becoming popular, and same with Dropbox, like it just became like, wow, these guys really have the sync thing figured out. And then the utility of it, once the bugs were ironed out of it actually functionally working, like the utility became really apparent. And yeah, I think that's part of the reason why Evernote's as massive as it is now. But yeah, I mean, just to my 2008 dumbhead brain, like going, "Holy crap, look at this," and falling in love with it was not hard.
And you fell hard, and you were using it daily,
Oh, yeah.
and the thing was growing like crazy.
Yep.
And I'm sure at that point you were one of those annoying people who told everybody you knew about how great this thing was. Am I correct about that?
I was like the biggest unpaid brand advocate. And annoying is not like an exaggeration. Like, I seriously bug people, like, "Why aren't you using Evernote?" And they would get really annoyed. But yeah, I was very, very active in proselytizing Evernote throughout the place where I worked.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, companies, pray for people like you to come along. And of course, you build something great and people are going to do that naturally, but you can't buy that kind of marketing, advertising, word of mouth type stuff. So this thing is really working for you. You love this service. It's growing. You can see it kind of growing in your productivity life, your work life, and I'm sure your personal life too. But what you got the idea somewhere along the way to write an ebook that would take Evernote users through kind of the mastery of this app. And I've seen your landing page. I'll link to it in the show notes. But you talk about, like, you know, the pain and some of the problems with using Evernote, or some of the difficulties, rather, of starting out and kind of getting it. Because it is, on one hand, it's a very simple application and simple service. You can get it almost right off the bat. But then you get beyond kind of the surface and things. I mean, you know, this is a nod to the company and what they've done. It seems like you can go really, really deep with this application as well. So somewhere along the line, you have this idea to write this book that would help Evernote users out. And I want you to take us through the process of preparing to write the book, why you did it, and then writing the book itself. And what were you hoping to accomplish?
Okay. So when I had the idea for the book in January of 2010, and mostly the genesis of the idea was, it actually came to me pretty quickly and I started acting on it really fast, believe it or not. But I realized, like, I've been using this piece of software for, you know, 18 months at this point or so. And I was really, really good with it. I knew it backward and forward. I knew all the tricks and all the little, you know, the hacky stuff you could do with it. And I sort of realized, like, I looked for Evernote enthusiasts or Evernote stuff online, trying to find manuals and other people who were like me. And there was very little, almost none. There were people blogging about it and stuff, but nothing in the way of, like, technical instructions, not even from the company themselves. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, and this, it's worth mentioning that my family and I were we weren't poor or whatever. We ate, but we were in debt, and I kind of wanted to improve our situation. And I had been freelancing for like a year doing web development stuff on the side, and it was helping, but I had seen a lot of people, you know, writing about selling things online, especially like digital products. And I thought, well, hell, I could give it a shot. You know, I'm not an awful writer. And so I had the idea, and I was having a smoke on my lunch break, and I thought, wow, I could totally write that. And then I hauled ass upstairs, sat down at my desk, and banged out just a brainstorm of chapters I could write. And sort of, you know, pared that down. That night I went through again and just, you know, and started working. I just picked one and started writing it. And I wrote the whole thing pretty quickly. I mean, not, you wouldn't know it based on when I shipped it, you know, relative to the idea, time I had the idea.
Sure.
But yeah, I just sat down. I wrote most of it. Well, I wrote a lot of it in Evernote initially, which is sort of poetic, but then that started to become more of a problem. Not to, you know, dump on Evernote, but like as a long form writing utility, it's kind of got, right, it's got problems. So then I moved to doing it in HTML, which I know, so that wasn't a big deal. So I wrote most of it in HTML and then converted it to Word to give to a designer, but getting ahead of ourselves, I think.
And so obviously you're kind of coming up with this little project, this side project, on a perfect storm. And it's like this perfect storm of, you know, passion for the subject. You know, there's a specific, we'll just call it a problem that you saw, an opportunity to help people understand this subject, in this case, this piece of software better, and your ability to do it. And so it sounds like things just kind of fell out of you rapidly, you know, especially at the beginning. But what was any problems writing this up? Did you come across any issues as you were writing it?
Other than my own, like, I sort of burned a lot of fuel on takeoff, if you know what I mean. Like,
yeah.
When I started writing, I was really excited. And this is true of most creative projects, I think. When you start out, like, you're really excited because it's really fun. You're going to do this thing that you really like. And at some point, most of the time, you're going to come into some portion of the project that's not fun. That's, you know, after I'd read this thing like 200 times and edited it several, I got so tired of looking at it and so tired of thinking about it. I hadn't even shipped it yet. So I would say that was probably the single biggest problem I encountered. Like, I didn't have a hard time with the material or, you know, with the actual writing part. That was not really super hard, but just my own trying to stay interested in finishing it. which it's, you know, it's kind of a weird artsy problem, I guess, but.
No, it's a real problem. It's a real problem. And how did you push through that? Just, you knew you wanted to do it, but how did you get through that moment?
Well, it was, like so many things, it was an incentive from somebody else who helped me to get it out the door. So we We should probably point out that I work for Evernote, like as an employee. So that's part of the story too. Initially, when I had the idea, after I started writing a little bit, I was like, you know, I don't want to write something about Evernote and then realize that I can't use the word Evernote in the name or something. So I emailed their general purpose inbox on their website and said, hey, can I use the name Evernote in this book I'm writing? Can I use the elephant logo? Like, what legally am I allowed to do here? And so I got a reply from one of the marketing people, and he said, this is a really great idea. This is super cool. We will help you promote this thing, and yeah, let us know if you need any help or whatever. By the way, don't use the elephant. And I was like, okay, no problem. So I wrote it, and then I was sort of sending them versions of it as I got big chunks of it knocked out. And as I got near the end, I sent it to them. I was like, okay, this is a passable, maybe second draft. I still have to edit some and add some stuff, but this is mostly what it's going to be. And I got an email from the guy who I dealt with initially. He said, hey, the CEO wants to talk to you. I was like, okay. So I get on the blower with Phil Libin, CEO of Evernote, and we talked about a few things, and he's like, hey, so do you want to work here? And I had a job at the time and was like, wow. I was really like, there's a very short list of companies that I would have really liked to work for, and that was one of them. And so long story short, I started working there like a month later.
And at this point, you hadn't finished writing Evernote Essentials yet. Is that correct?
Right. That's right.
Okay.
So got the job, and then I just didn't forget about the ebook, but just about got really into the work I was doing there. And they all knew that I was working on this book sort of mostly in the can. And in July of 2010, they were going to launch this thing called the Evernote Trunk, which is like a directory of applications and services and hardware that all integrate with Evernote. And they're like, we want to feature your book in the trunk. So have it ready to ship by the day the trunk launches. And I was like, oh, so I had like a month by that point to finish the book itself, get it, designed and laid out and all that and ready to sell. So that was the impetus for me actually getting off my ass and finishing it. It probably would have sat there for years if that hadn't happened.
Okay, so we're going to get into some specific numbers, if you're willing, later on. But tell us now, so you've got the book written. I'm sure you worked editing. You talked about you hired a designer to put the PDF together so it looked fantastic. Now we come to one of the great issues of the digital publishing revolution that we're all in. Tell us about the technical aspects. Just give us an overview of the technical aspects and challenges of selling an ebook online. What does the back end of a successful self-publishing venture look like?
Well, for me, it's been an iterative process. I started out with using a service called eJunkie, which is really, really straightforward. You have a product, you upload it to them, and they give you a button. And they can do affiliates and stuff like that, which is part of why I chose it, but it's also really inexpensive. And from there, I had a Tumblr site. I was toying with the idea of using Tumblr for a quote unquote, like serious blogging venture. And so, never mind.
Right.
And that, I had just one page on the site. I had a blog portion of it too, but one was just like, / Evernote Essentials was just my a horrible sales copy with a button at the bottom. And, they click the button, they go to PayPal, they pay, and then they get an email with the download link. And there wasn't that much more than, there wasn't much more than that to it. Like, it was pretty seamless, but also somewhat clunky because they kept getting sent to these weird like fat free cart pro URLs to download their stuff, and they had to go to PayPal, and a lot of people hate PayPal, and so that part was a little bit ugly. But it worked, and it was surprisingly simple, because I had always heard horror stories of using, oh man, you got to integrate a shopping cart. And I'd actually built shopping carts, like custom shopping carts by hand before, and I knew what a pain in the butt they were, and I was expecting it to be this just, oh man, this is gonna be a slog. But it actually was really pretty simple. So that, and I had a take a lesson from me. I had a MailChimp account that I had, because you could integrate eJunkie with MailChimp. Like, you dump their little URL in the preferences, and it will automatically subscribe anybody who buys to a MailChimp list. And I had this list sort of growing, for all the time I've been selling, and I didn't email them ever, because I'm horrible at selling things.
Brett, man, we got to talk about that later, man.
Well, I'm working on fixing that now. It's it's being fixed. But I knew, I'd read CopyBlogger and other sites enough to know that, like, capture their freaking email addresses and, just start there and email them when you can. But, make sure you're collecting that stuff.
Right. And I was happy to see recently that you jumped over to Genesis for WordPress and Premise.
Oh, yes.
Thanks for that.
No problem.
Things working out in that regard?
Absolutely. I buy pretty much everything you guys make because I love your products. So, you know, thank you for making such great stuff.
Okay, Brett, let's get into the good stuff here. You have done, at this point, the very hard work of writing the book. You've done the work of getting it up online and begun selling it. What happens?
Well, I have some friends who I've known online for a while who have pretty big followings. Which I realize is sort of a, not everyone has that. And that's why I'm always hesitant to like describe my rags to riches story as just like, well, this bootstrapped guy who did it all himself. Cause I happen to know some people who helped me promote the thing and that helped get it off the ground. And obviously Evernote themselves were pretty cool with promoting it in the trunk and they blogged about it and stuff. And it got a lot of traction really quickly. It would be, well, I don't really know what happened. I just sort of watched these, you know, I started selling it from, I was up visiting Evernote HQ, which at the time was in Mountain View, California. And I was just sitting in the lobby of my hotel and I just like hit the button and started selling it, like posted the blog post, the sales page went live and I'm like, well, here goes nothing, you know? And I would just sort of get an email whenever somebody would buy it. And, you know, I got three or four over the course of the morning and then they started rolling in a little more over the next few days and then Evernote blogged about it and it just went monkey balls crazy. And it sort of I've had a few little dips since then, but it's just sold really well almost all the time. And my three biggest reasons that I can think of for why that is I'm a pretty self-deprecating kind of weirdo at times, but I think the product is really good and I've learned to swallow my own, you know, self-loathing. But and having a really powerful network of affiliates has like totally made the difference. And just not being, I've tried really hard not to be like to promote my stuff too heavily. Like I'm not against promoting your stuff, of course, but I think it can be overdone. And so I just try to be like every like month or so, or like maybe 3 weeks, I'll be like, hey, I sell this thing. If you want to learn Evernote, it's a good way to do it. A lot of people like it. Won't check it out if you want. But just being really like relatable and not like douchey about it, you know?
Yeah, I was thinking this morning, I was thinking that though you and I need to do some talking about marketing that works in general, we need to have that conversation ongoing. You've done some really great stuff here. And there are, I think, some great lessons for people, even, you know, for folks who don't get marketing, who don't get, you know, the power of like content online and all of that stuff. But number one, you know, you made something great, first and foremost, most important, no matter what you're doing, right? And number two, there's this interesting element of, and Brian Clark talks about this all the time, aligning yourself with either people or projects or companies or products that already have taken some of that headspace, you know, in the market. And that ended up being incredibly valuable to your book. So in this case, aligning yourself with Evernote, aligning yourself with this software, this product that had a huge following and passionate users, by the way, of which you were one of the most passionate, which is also very important. But also this sense of, you know, you are a little self-deprecating, and I think should not be overlooked your ability to create and maintain real relationships with people that help you. I mean, this is one of the foremost pillars of, you know, any great marketing campaign. It's, you know, I mean, I guess simply you could put who you know, but it's not as easy as that. You have to really work to develop friendships and real relationships, not just, you know, kind of what can you do for me, and not just in any way, like you said, a douchey kind of, I need to set this up now so this person can help me later. And you've done that. You're really, really good at that. And I think that's something that cannot and definitely should not be overlooked, as you've spent a lot of time cultivating real relationships. And I can see it just between you and I. I mean, you're always out there, you're talking to people, you're talking to other people, you connect on a regular basis. And so anyway, I think just a couple of lessons from what you've done. It's certainly in many ways, like a perfect storm of a product, but definitely not luck.
It's funny, and thank you for saying what you said. That's very nice of you. I've got a lot of, you know, meat space friends that I hang out with, and you know, like I said, we weren't poor before, but now, you know, this thing sells really well, and we've got dough, and that's awesome. And I have the whole luck thing. I've talked about this a little bit in other places, but feeling like I just sort of fell ass backward into what a lot of people would consider like pretty wild success. And I would say things like that, and I'd be like, I really don't. This is so crazy that this happened. And they're like, it's not crazy that it happened. Like, you've been blogging on the internet for, as opposed to not on the internet, I guess, for like 10 years or something. And you've been on like social networks forever. And you're like, you're just around and people know you. And it's not like you just crawled out of this barn where you had fashioned this whatever amazing little waterfall project and no one knew who you were. Like, you had not a following, but like you had a presence. And, you know, like not obviously expressly for the purpose of utilizing it to grow my business, because at the time I didn't have one for most of that. And it just turned out that I had made a lot of friendships. And like you said, it just that was seriously so instrumental, was just having people out there who knew who I was, the know, like, and trust biz you guys talk about. You know, they knew who I was and they knew I wasn't some shiesty guy who was trying to take them for a ride. They're just, you know, this is a guy who's been online for a long time and does stuff, and he made this thing. And maybe we should check it out, because I know that he's not like trying to hose you. So that alone was a differentiating factor, I think, which I look back and see that probably was one of the most important parts.
Totally agree. And by the way, the greatest marketing campaign in the world, unless you've got $100,000 and, you know, a ton of time, I mean, nothing's going to work without those relationships and people who are willing to talk about your thing and spread it around. And that's all. Yeah, it all goes back to knowing you and trusting you. Are you willing to give us some numbers?
Sure. Yes.
So let's break it down just a little bit. What, like, first year, what kind of sales were we looking at?
First year sales.
If it's a ballpark.
I think we did about 6,000 copies the first year. Well, the first, it was like five, but it was between like July and end of the year. So half of the first year was like 5,000 or 6,000 copies.
And it's, the book sells for $29. Is that right?
That is correct.
And what kind of monthly sales are you looking at these days? Average.
Boy, on average.
I'm sure it fluctuates wildly, but.
Actually, it doesn't really.
Good.
Kind of surprising. Yeah, I know. It's great. we probably do about. Hell, it's right here. I can look. Thankfully, these computer machines are right here in front of me.
Computer machines.
So let me. I'm clicking and being a jerk.
You're not putting the card in?
No.
The punch card?
So far this month, I've done 1,225 sales.
Let me ask you this. I saw that you, just something about your business model. I saw that you, it's a one-time sale, so updates are free. Is that correct? Update the book. And what do you, I don't know if you have a plan, but I don't know, once a year kind of an update is the idea. But that, question number one. But number two, why did you decide to do that as opposed to kind of the standard traditional publishing model of new versions out, pay full price?
The update cycle has historically been once every like 12 to 14 months, which is pretty awful for like a rapidly iterated piece of software. So I'm committed to doing it more often because, you know, people are reading this thing.
That's right. I didn't think about that. Yeah.
That's the listen up, kids. If you're going to write an ebook about a piece of software, make sure it's not, you know, being worked on by 12,000 dozen engineers and who are just adding features every other week. And it made my life a little bit weird. So having to sell this thing that was in a lot of, not obsolete, but outdated, that was annoying. People were asking, so this doesn't look like the computer program I have in the book. What's the difference? So anyway, that was annoying. So I'm looking to do like a quarterly update thing, which now given the systems I have in place now, because I've moved like a lot of technical stuff around. So now doing updated versions will not be as hard. But the free update thing, I'll be honest. That was, some friends of mine, Chris Guillebeau, I don't know why he comes out on comes into my head whenever I think of this, but like he'll do like a several months of free updates whenever on the stuff he sells usually. Mm-hmm. And I thought about that. I'm like, oh, okay. Like I'd never done this before. And I'm looking around at my friends who do it. And I'm like, well, that sounds reasonable. And I realized I don't have no idea how the hell to do that. Like how to charge someone an update price for using the software that I was using. So I sort of just decided, I'm like, you know what? I'm not saying that people who charge update fees are doing this, but like to me, it felt sort of like fleecing when I was going to be like, I'm going to sell you this thing for $30. And then a year from now, I'm going to ask you for $20 more or whatever for, you know, a better product for sure. But to me, it just sounded like a headache. And I'm like, I don't really, I mean, at the time, I probably would have said I wanted their money. But right now, I don't want your money. Like, I want you to buy the thing one time and like it for a long time. I want you to like me more than I want you to pay me, you know? And so that's that. And also the whole not knowing how the hell to do it. Those two things were sort of the marriage of those two things were what led me to decide to just do free updates because I don't know. Like I didn't have any idea how long the product was going to exist or if it would even succeed.
Sure.
So, and building in more systems and more processes and having to figure out, you know, there's the whole 37 signals thing. There's sort of an anecdotal story where when they were first building Basecamp, they wanted to start charging for it. So they just put up this like pricing sheet without having any credit card processing technology built. And that put their, you know, they had 30 days to build credit card processing into their app. Like they had a hard deadline because they were already advertising this as a feature. And I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to make myself have to, okay, well now I got to go back and figure out who bought it and how to charge them differently and how to automatically fulfill an updated order. And just, I'm getting a headache thinking about it. It was just,
I'm with you. I'm with you on that. And you know, different people are going to react different ways to that, but I personally like to keep things as simple as possible. And that makes perfect sense to me. And again, it goes back to that relational marketing and building trust with an audience because by the way, who knows what you're going to do next, whether it's related to Evernote or not. And this, I mean, sounds like you're creating kind of a pretty rabid fan base around, you know, this particular product, but a lot of those folks are going to keep an eye on what you do for, you know, the rest of your life, not to be too creepy. and, you know, no matter what you do, they're going to at least take a look at it. A lot of them will, you know, engage or buy.
Yeah. And, you know, that would be cool. I want people to buy if what I'm selling is what they want, then yes, obviously please buy it. But I really don't want to be the guy who's like, hey, did you buy my thing yet? Hey, check it out. I made this thing. You should buy it and be like annoying about it.
Yep.
So but just the idea, because I just released version 3 of the book like a month ago or so. And I emailed everyone who had bought it, which at that point was like 18,000 people or so. And said, all right, that free thing I told you about that you were going to get, well, here it is. You know, go forth, enjoy.
Yep.
And I got tons of email from people who were like, dude, like I forgot I bought this like 2 years ago and you're giving me this new one for free? Like, that's insane. And they're like, that's so cool. Thank you so much. People like were really, really like happy.
Yep.
And seeing that, and if I had sent them saying, hey, if you want to download the new version, it's $10. I probably wouldn't have gotten a lot of like, you know, you shyster, what are you doing?
Right, right.
But I probably wouldn't have gotten a lot of like, holy crap, you're awesome emails like the ones I got. And to me, that's worth so much more than like some random dude's $10. Just knowing the people like, dude, this guy is like generous and he's nice and he does what he says he would do.
Yeah. The hardcore mercenaries out there aren't going to like it, but I think that's really smart, man. And obviously it's working for you.
Seems to be.
All right. Let's just a couple more quick questions here and then we'll put this one in the can. If you could go back to those very first days of thinking about and working on the book, knowing what you know now, what would you do differently?
I would have, well, this is sort of a technical answer, I guess. I would have built it. I would have had the product built so that I could change it easily. Because it's, in a lot of ways, it felt like a print book. Because having to pay like $1,000 to a designer to reflow a PDF document, like that put a lot of friction between me and updating it. Even though I knew there were typos, I knew there were mistakes. I'm like, I don't want to pay the guy a bunch of money just to fix this one little thing. And now I've I've since fixed that, but making it so, because you're going to, I knew I was going to make mistakes and I did make them and I didn't have an easy way to fix them. And in a lot of it, and I don't mean to sound like a perfectionist because I'm really not, but knowing that this is a digital thing, that it's a bunch of bits on a computer, like it can be fixed, but I didn't make it easy for myself to do that. And that, something that's probably the worst answer you ever heard, but
no. It's fascinating. Actually, do you have any ideas of how you might go about that differently, or is it just kind of a hope?
The way the book is constructed now is it's all written in plain text, and it lives on GitHub in a private repository.
Yep.
And I have a couple of little small programs I've written to convert it to HTML and a Word document, and to insert all the images and do all that stuff. And then that gets sent to the designer. So I can go back and I can create little revisions within the Git thing. This is so nerdy. Where I can say, this is the version I sent to the designer on this date, and I have like a little tag that I can go back and revisit that version of the text and see all the changes that were made since then. And I'm approaching it much more in like a something smelling like an engineering kind of fashion, where I can make all the changes I want. I can roll them all back if I want to. I have all the visibility in the world on how the product gets put together. And I worked with the new designer for this version. When I sent it to him, like, I need this thing to be changeable by you. Like, if I find a paragraph that I want to remove, I need you to be able to do it in like 5 minutes and give me a new PDF. It can't take 10 hours and cost me $1,000. He's like, all right, cool. So having those two parts figured out and making the whole process as simple, it's simple-ish, but having it be straightforward and understandable and wholly knowable by me and the guy I'm working with, that has made, I sleep better now.
Have you thought of moving into the Kindle store, iBook store, or particularly I think of, because like you said, images, all of that, iBooks author for the Apple's application for creating books for the iPad only. Have you thought about any of that?
I have, and I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, why?
Well, first of all, because I think there's the word book is really kind of muddy at this point, because I call what I wrote a book, even though it's not. Maybe it's sort of a book because it's a collection of words that you read in a linear sort of fashion, but it's not like, you know, I've got a copy of Strunk and White on my desk. That's also a book, but that cost me like $8. And it's probably longer than what I wrote, you know, but I'm selling very specialized knowledge. It's just like if you buy, I don't know, the copy blogger products like Teaching Cells, like, well, it's just a collection of PDFs and videos and stuff. Like, well, and it costs a good deal of money because it's really, really valuable. And it's really, really specialized. And if you took if you could somehow take my PDF and put it on Amazon and sell it for what I sell it for, I'd get laughed out of the store. Because I'd be alongside a bunch of $9.99 and below books. And like my thing is worth more than that. And, you know, people ask me on occasion, not a lot, but they want a Kindle version. And I'm like, well, I could make it like an EPUB or whatever, but I haven't yet. But to actually sell it on the Kindle store, I'm like, no. People would see that and go, are you joking me? This thing is like effectively like 100 pages long and it's $30. You're high. I'm not buying that.
You you know your product and you know your audience well, but yeah, that is an interesting thing. Bundling up in a zip file, the PDF, the EPUB, or even iBooks author as part of a package from your site may be another way to go. But then that adds complexity. We get back to that whole thing.
And, it does.
I like simplicity too, man. What's next for Brett Kelly and Evernote Essentials?
Oh boy, I'm to the point, this is the third version, like I mentioned, and the response to this one has been almost uniformly positive, even from people who knew customers and, you know, customers who got the update or whatever. So I'm really happy with where it is. I'm going to keep updating it, of course, because the software's going to change and I'm going to add more stuff. But now I'm going to try to focus on like adding additional value beyond just the PDF. And I don't want to commit to anything specific here because I'll look like an idiot if I don't do it. But
smart like, man.
Yeah. We call that equivocating. I just learned that word.
This is also a grammar podcast.
That's right. I actually have a running list of words of that I want. Yeah, never mind. Equivocate's in there. I'm not joking. So I want to do more to like augment the experience, because the PDF is cool and it's useful, but I think things like screencasts are like short, you know, here's how you do this thing, real quick tips and stuff like that. Because I get asked a lot of questions like that. Like, how do you do this one specific thing? Like, because I have, you know, I have the technology that I can do that now, where I have a little website people can, I can send them there and go, hey, well, here, watch this 10-second thing. And I could just make them real quick and fire them up there and really get more in tune with who's reading my stuff, who's buying my stuff, and trying like hell to actually delight those people in a, you know, specific way. Like, you know, like, the questions I get are all over the map and I can't answer them all, but I think that if I can build like a Evernote enthusiast resource library looking thing, like, I think that is, would be a very nice compliment to what the book has. And that's, as far as the Evernote Essentials project, that's probably going to be the next iteration, is going to be something like that.
Brett Kelly, thanks for coming on, man. Let's get out of here.
Dude, totally. It has been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.